if you're trying to make a video game for young people, probably primarily young boys at this time, put dinosaurs and guns together. Like, what do you, I mean, blood, easy. Yeah. That's the game.
Yep.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 199.
I'm going to throw up.
Of weekly episodes, dude.
199.
That's a lot.
Yes. Oh, well.
That's a lot.
I know, it is two away from 201. We are super excited for that. So want to take a moment here at the start of the episode. Instead of talking about retro gaming news, I'm sure there's some out there that's good. I want to, at this juncture of the podcast, take just a moment to highlight some of the recent gaming content that we've been producing, because there's been a lot of it. So Nolan, yes. Like, start off and just tell us what you're doing right now.
Oh, I'm leading the charge here. Listen, Fire Emblem has taken over my life and the podcast.
Kind of. I looked in our YouTube channel, even of unreleased, like y'all can't see it, but I can.
Yeah.
Nolan, there's a dozen videos in a row of Fire Emblem.
Yeah, I'm backlogged. So like I've got Patreon early access releases scheduled out for like 3 more weeks and they're all Fire Emblem 2 a week videos. A new mode was just released. So I'm starting a playthrough with Bradley, who you might, if you've been following us for a while, you know our friend Bradley used to be a producer on the show. He plays Fire Emblem, so I'm doing that. And I was telling Kenny before the episode started, Link's Awakening Remake is coming out in 6 days, so that's also going to take over my life. So there's a lot coming your way.
What do you say to the listeners that are like, but those aren't retro games?
Oh, I slap them twice,
yeah, okay.
And then
yeah,
I say, I don't care.
Gotcha. That's a nice way to say it. So where can they see your content? YouTube mainly?
YouTube mainly. I haven't streamed in a minute, but I've been enjoying like producing actual videos like intros and outros. I think it's just a nice viewing experience. So YouTube, you can like go to our playlists if that helps you and like find the ones I'm talking about. But at this point we're uploading like almost daily throughout the week. So just please subscribe to our YouTube channel and leave comments and interact there. It would super help. So, yeah.
So I am getting more and more hype over the Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
I'm actually at the point now where I finally believe it's going to happen.
Oh, you do? You, they turned you.
You didn't actually think it was real for a long time?
No, every time I see new content, I've had to like remind myself that this is actually happening and that this is actually going to happen. There's still a seed of doubt within me that after
Dude,
seeing all of this content.
Scrap it, you think?
Well, this has been so long in the making.
Yeah, it is. It better That's be fair. Good at this point. It does look good. What do you think?
Oh my goodness. I've loved literally every single thing about it. They just released a new trailer just a few days ago. And in this trailer, they showed a lot of the Turks for the first time. They showed off some of the summons with Ifrit, maybe even Odin and Shiva. I recorded a reaction video just the day after, and it's already uploaded. Put that straight up on YouTube so you can see kind of my instant reaction as I watched the trailer for the first time. But I have actually decided to spend some more time going like bit by bit, frame by frame, and over analyzing each element that is shown in this 2.5 minute trailer. And so I'm working on that now. That should be released sometime within the next couple of days. But I think my plan is just for the next 6 months before its release, I'm going to soak up everything that is released
that.
About it.
Yeah.
And then when it comes out somehow, and I still don't know how, I'm going to share my experience as I play it for the very first time.
Oh, so, you need to like take a week off of work and
yeah,
do a,
you really
a
do.
72-hour live stream.
I kind of really, like, how often does someone's favorite game from 1997 Dude. Get remade? Like that's, yeah, this is a once in a lifetime
you
thing.
You need to take a couple days at least. Like seriously, just vacation, You and the wife just like relaxing, playing, streaming, and recording it. Hey, by the way, that analysis video I think is actually a great idea because most videos online about the remake are like, you know, fake reactions. Like they're overhyped and they're being like, oh my gosh, like my favorite. But how many of them are actually going to take the time to nerd out and really analyze it like a freaking NFL video clip? You should do it.
Well, at least one. I mean, I am doing it. I'm halfway through the editing process, so I'm looking forward to that. So that's kind of what I'm doing. YouTube also. I've streamed some recently. I've done Dicey Dungeons, and sometimes I am streaming the Retro Game of the Week. But yeah, YouTube is kind of like, I'm all about crisp, clean content. Yeah. So what you could check out our YouTube for that. Kenny, what are you producing?
I mean, I'm really terrible about recording my gaming sessions and sharing them with the world because I'm an old curmudgeon. But I make it around to dropping some video of the new Civ 6 Battle Royale mode that just dropped.
Wait, you should!
It literally came out this week, and it's just ridiculous, like side content that the developers made just for fun, and then they had so much fun playing it that they were like, well, we're gonna release it so people can do this too.
That's great.
And yeah,
that would kind of be ridiculous. Absolutely awesome. No, that'd be great. I couldn't see you doing a full let's play or like a full reaction video or something like that, just like I couldn't see anything due to the fog in our retro game of the week, Turok Dinosaur Hunter
overview.
The year is 1997, 1 year after the N64 was revealed to the world.
And the year that Final Fantasy VII came out. So Final Fantasy VII was
released. Yeah, let's go back to talking about the remake for 40 minutes.
I thought Nolan was actually confused about what year it was.
That's funny,
Kenny. He's time traveling.
So it was also the year that marked Nintendo's dive into 3D gaming. And a publisher called Acclaim Entertainment decided, well, a couple things. One, they wanted to buy a comic book company, Variant Comics. And two, they wanted to make a game based on the highest selling series of that comic publisher. And so that's where we got Turok from. They hire an Iguana Entertainment to develop Turok. And it was their first title on the N64 as well.
Iguana and Acclaim, I believe they were also together in making NBA Jam.
They were. So Iguana, developed both the original and tournament edition of NBA Jam, and then Acclaim bought them out and renamed it to Acclaim Studios Austin. So they were based in Austin. I found that out too.
So honestly, Turok is kind of just NBA Jam 2 or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say 3, but I feel you.
Yeah, no, 3, tournament, yeah, and then 3, Turok,
So it was the first title on N64, and it was kind of shot in the dark, maybe. So they were hiring this company to do it. They worked together before, but this new console I feel like was weird, and like Nintendo was weird about third party companies and stuff. And so I'm just guessing that it was kind of really important. Well, actually, I know it was important for them to sell well with this game. They were kind of putting all their cards on the table. When the game released in 97, it was a massive hit and probably, maybe still, the most popular non-Nintendo game that was released on that console.
I mean, there's a lot of debate there, but it certainly is a really popular one for sure.
Even to the point of selling, it was selling consoles for Nintendo. Like,
yeah, it
was
came
super
up early
popular
in the cycle and was super influential in one of the games that helped, you know, make the Nintendo 64 what it was.
Yeah,
I won't argue with.
If you're trying to make a video game for young people, probably primarily young boys at this time, put dinosaurs and guns together. Like, what do you, I mean,
blood,
easy.
Yeah.
That's the game.
Yep, that's the game. And later that year, we would get GoldenEye. So this was pre-GoldenEye, and I would argue that some of the choices in this game maybe influenced the final product that was GoldenEye, which is the more popular game for this console, I would argue.
For sure. Absolutely, 100%. But I think, yes, they're both first-person shooters. I think, and there's more games in this cycle, 1,000%. But Doom, Quake, Turok, GoldenEye. Like, oh, you can see the progression of first-person shooters in there, and you can see similar elements in all of those, even along with some of the weapons, which we'll talk about in the gameplay. Like, a lot of it is just copy-paste, improve. Yep. And it's interesting, and keep that in mind, that this preceded the release of GoldenEye.
It did, and was early on in console 3D FPS. I know PC, Kenny, don't get mad, PC had been doing it, and it was their thing, but adapting it to consoles was a challenge, and this was an early adopter.
Oh, totally. And I wouldn't be mad about it. Like, if somebody tried to tell me it was better than PC games at the time, like, they'd be smoking something. But
the plot,
they needed to get consoles to be anywhere close to the experience. And that's what they were trying to do, I think.
Well, and you did say PC. If you haven't mentioned, this game was also released at the same time, or right around the same time, on the PC. And so there are different things with that release than the Nintendo 64. We might mention some of them, but we did all play the Nintendo 64 version.
Right. It was made for the 64, though. Like, it's not a PC game.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair. They came out at the same time, but it was for sure, like, let's make an N64 FPS. Plot's fairly straightforward. You play a Native American named Turok, so that's where the title comes from. I guess his name's actually Tal Set. And you are trying to stop this evil person named Campaigner that wants to take over the world. And that's like the main point of the plot. Along the way, you're killing people, bugs, dinosaurs.
Yeah, and you say that's the main point of the plot. You're pretty much getting that plot from, I don't know, the booklet that comes with it.
The comic.
Yeah, there's not story game.
I mean, there is the comic that it's based on that will actually have the story.
But one knew it.
The game itself doesn't include much story elements. Like, it's a first-person shooter, run and gun, platformer, grab something big and blow up some dinosaurs experience.
Yeah.
Do either of you have experience with this game? Did you play it when you were younger?
Kenny?
A very little bit. I did have a 64, and so we would sometimes borrow a game or have a friend bring a game over, or I'd rent something. I didn't own this game, but I did get to dabble. I've not been classically a first-person shooter guy, and so the gory dinosaur exploding thing wasn't my cup of tea, but I did play it a little bit.
Nolan?
No. Like, I have this game because I borrowed it from a friend. Played it for like 2 seconds and was like, dang, I'm playing GoldenEye, screw this. And I turned it off. And like, for some reason, I've hated the game since then.
You never gave it back?
No, he didn't want it
back. No, you don't give games back. That's ridiculous.
Don't give anything back.
Who are you guys?
I had experience with this, but I didn't own it. It was a rental for me. You see a dinosaur on the front with a Native American holding a knife about to stab into the dinosaur. I'm gonna rent that. And so I rented it multiple times, enjoyed it, but it was difficult for me during that time. Platforming has never been my thing, especially when I was 12 or whatever.
Mom let you rent a rated M game?
Yeah, that's a big deal. They didn't look at those things.
Oh, they didn't know. That's good. My mom did know, and so I was kind of...
Also, why was this rated M?
Blood.
Like, it only was rated M because there was blood animations, I think. Literally the only reason.
Compared to today's standard of what's
Other things, even other shooters that were like M for comparison, it's a totally... this one's super mild. Like,
I think it was for blood and violence, honestly, and it was just the time it came out.
Yeah, you make the blood green or you turn it off. Like, you have both of those options in the game.
Gameplay.
You play Turok Dinosaur Hunter in a first-person perspective. And so I've mentioned Doom, Quake, even GoldenEye. That is what you're seeing. You see a little bit of the hands of Turok. You see the weapon that he is holding. You look down and there's no feet. So very comparable to these other first-person games. But you're in a complete 3D open-level environment.
Yeah, and you also see a HUD, which is a standard for that time, but it's super minimal, and I actually really liked only seeing two
really
things.
Like super minimal. I wish we went back.
Not even a map? Like, I mean, the map's there, but it's an overlay, and it's very like small and non-intrusive.
I liked how they did the map as a toggleable option. It was really nice. And then clean, like you pretty much have your health or like the state of your character, your health or your armor later if you have armor, and a little icon for how much ammunition you have based on whichever weapon you have. And then a small thing on weapon swap to show you what weapon you're going to take. But that's it. Like, you only see the things you need to see, which is so nice on a game like this.
Yeah. And then it leaves the rest of the screen for you to enjoy the scenery and the level design. And they really spent time going in on this level design, that they've got multiple different worlds, and you go back to this hub world, and after you've gotten a certain amount of keys, you're able to unlock the next world. And I think there's like maybe 8 of them, mm-hmm. maybe 9 of them. I don't know, something like that. And they've got their slight nuances between stages. Some of them are very similar to the others, but it's kind of this open environment. The first couple are jungle-esque, what you would think of for dinosaurs, what they're kind of inhabiting and living in. But you've got waterfalls, and you've got mountains, and you've got ruins, and you've got all of these things that they're really wanting you to enjoy. However, you have to get really close to be able to see them, because on the N64, there is a whole lot of fog that is used to make this game actually feasible.
Yeah,
right, like that's the real trick there. I don't feel like it was just a like design decision. Hey, we're going to do fog so that when enemies jump out, it's closer. Although it does have that sort of effect of keeping you on your toes a little bit more. I really think it was just a like, we can't actually render the distance and make it look good at all.
Sure.
So let's just sort of shroud everything.
Yeah, it was both of those things. And when you consider that, like, that's kind of a clever solution. I know it's silly and it looks dumb at times and it was annoying, but like, what else are you going to do? It's going to look odd if you don't have something there. And like, having some mist or fog in a dark cave or in a jungle, I buy it, but it's kind of silly.
And see, so like other FPSs around this time, you've got much smaller environments. You're in buildings or you're inside or in caves. Yeah. And so it's somewhat easy to do. But in this game, they really opened it up. And so their tactic is tons of fog or darkness in caves. But although it's noticeable and although it's annoying at times, I found that it makes sense in the environments that you find in Turok.
And those environments were actually really unexpected for me. I'm talking, when I played this game, I started it up, died once, and quit. I didn't realize that it had this much exploration. I thought it was more like, I don't know, like GoldenEye, in the sense that you have smaller stages, you have an objective, you complete it, and it's over. But in this one, they really wanted you to take the time to explore and explore at your own pace. They don't like rush you with the timer or anything. It's just like, here's the world. Okay, hub world, cool. Now you can go explore. And there was platforming. Like, I actually really enjoyed the exploration aspect of Turok this week.
But did you enjoy the platforming? In your first play, it appeared as though, at least at the beginning, the platforming was getting on your last nerve.
So the first play, I went in pissed, and I left pissed. So it was unfair, though. And I like platformers. But the reason I was frustrated with this platforming is because of a different thing, and that would be the control scheme of this game. The control scheme is odd and very... I feel like they made the wrong choice, and I thought my controller mapping was busted, because your left joystick is... I have to think about this. Strafing?
It's you...
Yes.
No, I'm saying like on a 64.
No, this is easy. Your joystick, it controls the weapon movement.
C
buttons control player movement.
Right.
Right.
It's one of those things. Didn't we have the conversation with, what game was it, where we think that they developed it before they knew what the controller was going to be like? Was that Billy Hatcher? No, it wasn't Billy Hatcher.
That was
Hatcher.
The one y'all hated and the one I loved.
Mischief makers.
Yep. Here's the thing, though. I don't think they had a choice here. For the Nintendo 64 controller, and for them not wanting to be a shooter where you don't get to look up and down and be in this environment where you're just like moving and looking left and right and then shooting regardless of height, I feel like it was actually the best implementation for that controller.
No, did you not just flip the two?
You look.
Oh yeah, GoldenEye was.
Mischief Makers is different because it was 2D. And it didn't bug me, but here,
oh, yeah,
the fact that you're looking left and right, like when I push forward on the joystick and I look down, no. GoldenEye had it so you could strafe left and right with your C buttons and look up and down with your C buttons, and you move with your joystick, which makes way more sense.
The fact too that the visual of it, the, you know, Dustin called it weapon positioning. I think it's like in my mind, it's the view. It's what you're seeing. The fact that that was not toggleable, that it was inverted or wasn't inverted. I forget which way I prefer it.
I think it's inverted.
Yeah, I think it inverts as the default. That was the piece that was super frustrating once I figured out all the other mapping. So like on the controller, the C button, they really did set it up almost like another D-pad. And that gives you two things. Sure, we've come a long way with dual sticks now, and that feels 100 times more natural. And yes, any game before that is hard. And I was also super frustrated this week because I had to do so much tweaking to like get it to feel natural. But once I did, it wasn't too bad.
This is the second or third time this episode that you've said the word toggleable. Is that a word, Kenny?
Yeah,
sure. Something can be toggled. No,
so I know what you're trying to, well, like what you're communicating, so that's fine. You're like toggleable is in the dictionary?
It is, yes.
Probably.
Okay.
Here's, I think so.
Okay, I'll stay on theme and I'll say, in truth, I haven't the foggiest.
Hey! I got to come up with
one. Episode 199.
We're so good at podcasts, guys.
Still on theme with the controller, because we're only talking about the joystick and the C buttons. They further had some weird decisions, unique decisions, we'll say that, where the Z is the trigger and that shoots, which is good. I think that's normal.
Perfect. Yes.
But the right shoulder button is jump, and A and B are switch between weapons.
Yep.
And the L bumper, L shoulder button is bringing up your map. All of that seems weird compared to what other games do. However, outside of the joystick and the C buttons, although that too, I kind of got used to this configuration later in the week.
I mean, the Z trigger to shoot makes total sense to me. That's what I'm used to. The jumping on a R button is not okay, and I never got used to it. It's like
they should have let you switch that for sure.
Yeah, it's so strange to not just have a button for jumping. But I'm not really used to jumping in FPS games. A lot of FPS games don't even have jump. So I don't know. It was just kind of like I was finding myself not jumping at all and then being like, okay, I have to. It's a platforming section. And the fact that it was a trigger, it was the control scheme had me all messed up. But I will say, if I had like a more comfortable control scheme, similar to like a modern day FPS, I think the platforming sections would have been really enjoyable and pleasant.
Oh, see, I completely disagree.
Why?
I think that they did as well on the controls as they could for the Nintendo 64. And I know we say it every time we do a 64 title, but like that's just a harder controller experience to emulate, so I'm not going to beat that dead horse. But I think the platforming was the most frustrating element of this game, even if you had controls that you could use.
It Why,
was
the design?
Kind of like, awkward and just felt punitive and, I don't know.
Toggleable?
Like, toggleable. I knew playing this week that if I was having difficulty, Nolan was going to get used to it and Kenny was going to suffer with every single jump.
Oh, every single time I would play this game this week, I would get to places where like you had to progress or find a little hidden thing and you had to jump there four times, and I'd go fail at it three times and get frustrated and turn it off and come back to the game later and finally push through it and then progress a whole bunch and then get to a section that you had to be so on with your movement. And like weird things with the movement too. Jumping at like a weird diagonal sent you further than just jumping straight ahead.
Yeah.
And like jump. All kinds of stuff that just felt kind of awkward. I think that stuff to me was the worst
Kenny,
part of this game.
You should watch my first play because I think you would, I think you'd identify with the way I was feeling, because I was actually so mad. I tried to hide it, and I was really frustrated with falling. And I found out later when I cut stream and continued that the final jump that I messed up on was the checkpoint before a little mini boss.
Oh, that's so, the worst.
Yeah, I can see you being pretty mad about that.
I started getting used to the platforming. I was never great at it, but once you get it down, it makes sense within the context of the game. Like, it once it plays by its own rules is what I'll say.
Mm. And it definitely gets easier. And from a design point of view, a lot of the times when you fail at the platforming, you don't like instantly die. Sometimes later on as the difficulty ramps up, you do. But a lot of, at least early, a lot of it is like you miss. Oh, well, you just fell a little bit. You got to go climb around a thing and then progress again. And so they kind of hold your hand into it, I actually think, pretty well, forcing you to learn some of those things. Outside of not, like, giving you a learn mode, they also have, like, weapons that you can only get early on if you jump for them. And I don't know, it kind of felt logical how they went about doing all that.
Something else the controls could have really ruined, especially in a FPS, is the shooting on the topic of guns. And I was really worried at first because I was like, I can't aim this. Like, I can't do this. But thankfully, there's an auto assist targeting aim. And I usually really hate those in modern FPS, like Halo. I don't like it. It messes me up. But in this game, I absolutely loved it. It was so good.
Yeah, you have to do it to some degree with these early first-person shooters. And I thought this one was probably the best one that I played with. Like, it's very forgiving, but at the same time, you've got to have the enemy center screen. And if they're on a higher elevation, mm-hmm. then it's not just going to give it to you for free.
You gotta
look. If they're on a lower elevation.
Yep.
So, like, it somewhat made sense. And one of my favorite things in the week, well, first of all, I love the death animations, mm-hmm. but sometimes I'd get a lucky pistol shot and the enemy would go down with one shot and would have just this fake, it doesn't look real at all, guys, but blood spurting out of his neck as he, like, screams and grabs it and falls down to the floor. Like, I don't know. I found that nice that not only, one, can you just get the enemy center screen and fire away and it will most likely hit, but that they give you kind of crit hits every once in a while. And mm-hmm. And I have found a lot of pleasure in that.
Yeah. It's not realistic blood for 2019, but, like,
it's was not decent. Realistic blood for 2012.
No, but you know that.
I thought it looked good. I thought it looked good.
Come on.
Like, they did a good job. The animations weren't, like, super clunky. The fact that they actually used, like, models for their people, like, did motion capture on that, is not surprising. And I know blood is, like, hard, but you want to make it squirty and noticeable. And,
okay.
Like, you only have so much you can do. And I thought they did a fine job with the blood.
All right. Squirty. Favorite weapon. There are quite a few.
There are quite a few, but there's none that until later that are, like, standouts. You Fair. Get all the normal guns, like a pistol and a shotgun, and, like, you get all of those, a knife. Later in the game, you get a weapon that I liked, the fusion cannon. I liked any of the tech weapons, the alien kind of weapons that were fun. So I liked the fusion cannon, but I will say that I really liked the knife because I think it's actually overpowered.
Oh, yeah. No ammo required. Like, there's no fatigue meter in this game. Like, it's a really good... I would love a knife-only run.
Yeah, if you hit, and I'm sure there are those, but if you hit, most of your enemies that are not bosses or, like, mini-bosses or anything like that, they'll go down with one strike.
Yeah, and I love that they thought of that, like, the scenario that you could run out of ammo.
So for me, favorite was the... like, explosive, I guess, tech version of the bow and arrow.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Like, that's just mm-hmm. so on theme, and they made it really strong, and they made it the unique, like, blue explosion, and it was just good. So that was a really fun one.
Nolan?
I think mine's the fusion cannon. I liked the tech weapons later on, because it's like, wait, what? I went from being, like, nobody in the jungle with a knife to now I have alien guns. But I hated the crossbow, I will say that. I didn't think it was good, but it's because I learned later, like, when I was done playing, that I wasn't holding down. I was just, like, firing, but you have to draw the bow.
You gotta charge it.
Pull it you have back, to draw the arrow. And I was just hitting them weak, and I was like, this gun sucks.
All right, lastly, did either of you end up using any cheat codes this week? It's Nintendo 64 no. 97. It's the prime time to use big head mode and different things like that.
I did not, but I wish I had.
The master code is it's letters that looks like a mess. It's N, T, H, G, T, H, and more. But when you like actually if you added a few letters to the code, it's on the eighth day God created Turok.
Oh,
is the code. I know, it's so good.
That's sick.
And it gives you access then to just turning on or off any of the other things. So they've got big head mode. You can change the blood color, different things like that. But then they've got invincibility, unlimited ammo. So after I got done playing this week, I threw on those codes and I just I just ravaged the game. It makes it for a fun experience, especially if you're dying a lot or suffering through some of the things. Having unlimited ammo and invincibility always makes for a good
cheat
experience.
Codes. It's so representative of that era of gaming for me. I should have. I didn't even look at them, but like big head or DK mode and GoldenEye, so stupid. Slap chops.
Aged. So I discovered that Turok pushed Nintendo 64's graphics capabilities to its limits, and it said that they even had to cut certain elements to fit the game on its 8 megabyte cartridge.
Yep.
Which, first of all, that's such a small cartridge, man. That's not a lot of space.
And makes you appreciate the games that actually pulled it off.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They have to work some kind of magic to get it all on there.
It is magic. I don't even know how they go about starting to list what they need to cut and how it's going to work, and the end product still feels so complete. Like, I wonder what this game would have been if they would have fit every single thing they wanted on it, you know?
I wonder if they had more story elements and had to cut some of
that'd been cool.
those things, just because there's, like, none. Like, right. in between or before or after,
like
there's
cutscenes maybe or something?
I doubt it. I feel like they knew what they wanted this game to be from the beginning, and it was like something that the Nintendo 64 didn't have, at least yet, and it was that Doom experience, but like with some of the bigger open world exploration, and I don't know, they comboed that well, so I don't feel like that's what lacked, but they did a good job, you're right, of milking what they did have resource and hardware wise, especially for the first. So like, really make something that for the era and the hardware looks pretty good.
And they even had like underwater sections where it looked fantastic. Swimming,
it looked fantastic.
And it
and
worked
you
fine.
Felt, oh, yeah. You should not be able to go underwater seamlessly. Yeah. Feel like you're swimming. And like they did that in 1997. Yeah. And man, there's not many games that are doing that around this time at all.
Well, what else? You were saying that you learned that they pushed the console to its limits, and for sure. But like, they did other things that I feel like defined or helped develop this genre for what we have today. Like, if you shoot, they put a mechanic in the game that isn't super clear, but if you shoot enemies at different parts of their body, well, you said you get the crit, but like they also have different death animations depending on where you shot them.
Yeah, or I can like see how far away you were when you shot them or different.
Yeah,
things.
I can see the wheels turning for these developers and for game companies at the time, like, okay, that's something. And now that's totally a thing in games. You shoot somebody in the head, their head pops off, or you shoot their leg off and they limp. It's, I'm actually kind of blown away by this team.
Sure. You get different death animations, translucent water, as we already discussed, destructible environments, lens flares, all of these things that for the time are super impressive and really helped set the scene. Yeah. I really do think that the developers of GoldenEye had to, and they were probably well into the process because 97 and 97,
oh, yeah, it was
like
months
you can't
later, but
change
still.
Much at this time. But they were at least coming from the same source, both Turok and GoldenEye. And you can see a lot of that. And GoldenEye is not the pinnacle of and the crowning of achievement or anything like that. It's great. But even games that came out after these games, they definitely took some notes from how much they were able to accomplish in such a small cartridge.
Oh, if nothing else, you know, they saw how successful this game was and like really putting a claim back in business to a large extent when this
For
was
sure.
sort of their last shot, and selling like multiple millions of copies.
1.5.
And you know that the people working on GoldenEye are like, guys, we're about to be so big.
Oh yeah, dude. I know, like, it was, you know, rare. It had to at least, they were,
give,
like,
them confidence that there, yeah, was an audience for this, because people ate this stuff up.
For sure, for sure. It was like, it was the popular genre at the time, I feel like, or it was starting to be, like, people played Turok. It was like, you told your friends, like, I think about Switch right now. I tell my friends to buy Switch and get this game or that game. I feel like N64, it was buy Turok, at least until GoldenEye comes out.
I think the biggest aging factors are things we already talked about. One, I think it's the draw distance and the fog and the darkness.
Absolutely.
That will be noticeable, and so you'll have to work through that. But I think it works in the majority of these environments. And then it is the control setup. Mm-hmm. I think that that single-handedly is the most difficult thing to overcome, just because it's so foreign to the modern gamer.
I agree. It's something that I still struggle with at the end of my playing this week. I got better at it, but never fully used to it. And it's not going to get better. The control scheme is what it is. So I agree. That's probably the defining aging factor. I agree 100% with that.
But if you can get used to it, and Turok is something that sounds interesting to you, they remastered this game.
Yep.
And it came out, was re-released for the PC in 2015. I believe it's widescreen, further draw distance, greater control. Of course, if it's on the PC, you've got a mouse and keyboard. And then it came out again for the Xbox One in 2018. And then it was released for the Switch just this year. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, I was like, wait, no, it's not. And then it... Totally.
Which I hadn't seen that anywhere else until we played this game this week.
The remastered speedrun on PC is actually really entertaining, by the way.
This game also launched a series, Turok 2, Seeds of Evil, Turok Rage Wars, Turok 3, Shadow of Oblivion, and other Turoks. There's a lot of Turoks in the Turok universe, so there's plenty of dinosaurs with guns and guns with dinosaurs, if that's what you fancy.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every episode, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Kenny, how about you jump in here?
I'll slide right in. You guys know first-person shooters aren't my jam. You know that I have to remap and reinvert all of the things, and like the frustration of platforming from a first person's perspective are just not go-to things for me. And so there was a lot of frustration this week. But I also can recognize when a game is like good and made well and lovingly crafted and does what it's supposed to do with excellence. And so, 2019 playing early gen first person shooters, kind of always a little bit rough, but once you can get over those hurdles, this game does what it wants to really well. You run around, you shoot stuff, you explore, you find better weapons, you get bigger, there's crazy monsters to kill, and those parts of it are so good, and I had enough fun in those moments when I could get lost in the game this week, that I think that this game deserves New Game Plus status for how it was made, for its influence on the genre, even if it's not the one I would tell most people to go back and play if they want an old first-person shooter today. So yes, New Game Plus status for me.
That's the weirdest yes. All right, we've got one thumbs up.
So I said earlier, I didn't like this game. Don't like it. It's I just never connected to it. I don't know if it's the theme. I don't know if it's just... there's no real... good reason. It's just I was young and I preferred other games at the time, and so I was snobby. Played the first play, still hated it, but I played the game quite a bit this week, and I found not only an amazing first-person shooter, but one of the most influential games I think we've played on the podcast for future games. I did not expect that at all. I, for some reason, thought this came out way after GoldenEye, way after all these other big titles, but found out that this was, frankly, a masterpiece that was so important for this console and this genre the exploration, it is one I would tell people to go back and play. Like, first person shooter at this time, I wouldn't tell them GoldenEye. You need friends and you need local multiplayer, and that's aged in its own right. But this has a great single player experience with exploration, boss fights that are unique and fun and feel like bosses. Yes, 100% yes. I like this game a lot now, and I was stupid.
Did I just actually hear you say that you would recommend someone go back and play Turok above GoldenEye only because of the lack of multiplayer, where the other has an amazing story, is a better shooter, looks better? I don't even like GoldenEye 64, I'm offended by the statement.
Back off. No, let him do his thing.
This game needed multiplayer. I think it would be more popular if it had it. Yes. It doesn't, but... yeah, I stand by that. The single player experience is maybe better.
Super, super, super interesting.
We've
to
gone
watch
off
you
the rails.
Evolve so far this week. Kenny Turok might think devolve, but that's super interesting. And I'll just follow along and just keep it brief. I think this is Doom with dinosaurs. I think we all had a similar experience. It's a pretty steep learning curve. You play 30 minutes, you're not going to like it. You play an hour, it's going to be frustrating. You play 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, this game is going to rock your world in all the right ways. It accomplished a whole lot in 1997, and it deserves New Game Plus status 5 times over.
Yes.
Which means Turok is New Game Plus certified. But what did you think? We had a few people write in this week. Garlisle said, I played the Nintendo 64 version this week. Sadly, everything I want to like about Turok is thwarted by something else about it. The core primal jungle aesthetic is ruined by being unable to see more than a few feet ahead. The bow is great. The bow is a great inventive weapon. ... But the rest of your arsenal is miserably generic and out of place. The sense of exploration is great until you realize much of it is mandatory, possibly forcing you into replaying levels if you took the right path too early. The Doom-esque fast pace is shot in the foot by miserably precise and punishing platforming. At least it nailed its music. Those driving drums are awesome.
Wrong.
I will totally agree on the exploration ending up being mandatory. Made it feel less rewarding and more chorey at some point.
Of course it's mandatory. I don't get that complaint.
No, there's tons of games that, like, you get bonus armor, or you get easier stuff, or you get to go see something or find something, but
it was probably
it's not
in the
like
game
progression
they had to cut
based.
It. 8 megabytes.
I don't know. You could easily get to a place where, like, that one super hidden cave you just can't find, and it's really frustrating. I totally agree with that sentiment.
16-bit dad said, having played Turok for the first time this week, I have to say that I like the open world aspect of it. Mm-hmm. There's a large area to explore, even on the first level. Sadly, actually exploring it means that you have to play the game. The biggest issue I had with Turok is the control scheme. The navigation and camera controls are really hard to get used to, especially going back to it now since we have such a better control setup for FPS games. Also, the fact that the game uses an aim system akin to Monty Python, where you can just shoot in your general direction and it will sometimes hit, makes combat incredibly frustrating. I can see why back in the day this game was appreciated a lot. It was in that time where FPS controls still hadn't been decided upon, so people were probably more forgiving. But playing it now would certainly burst the nostalgia bubble. Because of the control system and aiming, I really can't say I would give Turok NGP status.
Play the remastered version.
All
those
disagree
things
with us.
Are fixed in that. And so, like,
yeah,
it's that.
And
that
it's the
game,
same game.
What?
It's the same game still. Yeah. It's not like they added tons of content or changed. Like, it's still the same game. It's just a better playing experience.
Yeah, that's it's a better experience. Like, if I'm going to go back and revisit Turok, that's the one I'm playing. And I suggest that all of those complaints are answered in that one, I think.
Yeah, Dustin, you also act a little baffled by people not liking it. You know, to some degree, you only put in enough time to get to the point where it was fun.
Yeah.
Because, like, we've got to talk about this game, and so you're obligated.
But that's what games are.
That first 30 minutes to an hour where you're setting up controls and stuff, it really is miserable.
Yep, miserable. Miserable. But then you get past that point, and it is delicious.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Antonin says, finally, I'll say it. Turok Dinosaur Hunter is one of the best games that came up on NGP this year. I played the remaster, but watching the original, the remaster isn't too different in gameplay. Allow me to share my favorite parts. Number one, the cadence. This is like a Jungle Quake game, and I'm loving it. Number two, to match the speed of the game, the music keeps you moving, even when you try to slow down and take your time. Number three, the bow is by far my favorite weapon. Number four, the atmosphere of the game. Number five, blue portal sections where you can get more ammo, life, and practice platforming. Yes. Six, the platforming aspect of this game was probably one of the most fun I've had with platforming in quite a while.
No.
Number seven, levels had just the right amount of platforming, maze solving, and straight up fighting.
Yes.
This game came at a great time in the 90s. It followed Jurassic Park. Godzilla came out the year after. Stargate had just been a thing. And this game kind of mixes all of those things together, along with the craze of FPSs that were gaining popularity. I think this game was key to first-person shooter game evolution. Yep. Do I recommend you play it? Absolutely.
Agreed, for the most part. Yeah. It was just such a... But best of the year for the podcast, that's an interesting statement. I don't remember all the games we played.
That's a bold one, though, for as many games as we've played in the last year, and some really good ones.
But I love that you've enjoyed it so much. He even says that by the time this episode airs, he'll have beaten the entire game. So, yeah, again, I think we're all in agreement here that you hop in immediately, you're going to be disenfranchised. You push through, you're going to enjoy it. But best thing to do, I think we're all in agreement, is play the remastered version. That kind of fixes the first 30 minutes to an hour and puts you into action right away.
Yes, agreed.
For now, we're going to put aside Turok Dinosaur Hunter. And we're going to My notes say we're not randomly selecting this week.
Why'd your notes say that? Are they lying?
Kenny?
This is the best part of the episode and we're leaving it out.
What?
You're about to lose every single viewer.
I'm about to play Turok.
Why would we not randomize this?
Okay, we actually have a really good reason, guys. And that's, if you didn't know, 199 happens just before 200. And 200 is a really big, shiny number that feels like an awesome accomplishment. And also coincides with us being at pretty much our 4-year anniversary for the show. And so we wanted to do something really special for you guys. And so we're not randomizing.
That's it. That's the surprise. See you next week.
No, so is what we're doing instead is, in preparation for episode 200, our 4-year anniversary, we have plans to give you content daily leading up to that episode. So you need to stay tuned to the interwebs. You need to stay tuned to our YouTube, maybe even our Twitch, or your podcast feed, because we have got content that is going to be released daily leading up to the anniversary episode.
So definitely check out our YouTube page. Make sure the alert is on, because you will be getting some surprises in there daily. And we're hoping to build a lot of hype. So we hope Discord is also hype with us, talking about the upcoming 200, some of your favorite moments from this last year. Like, we want the discussion to be going all week long. So join us in Discord for that as well.
And if you're worried that your favorite parts of the episode aren't here, don't worry. You're going to get all of the joy of a random selection and even more. And it doesn't mean we're not playing a game this week. It just means you got to tune back in to find out what game to play along with us. And so open your ears up, be around. Yeah, we can't wait for this week.
Yeah, it does mean we will not be playing a single game this week.
You're well said. And if there was ever a week to show your appreciation for all of the awesome content that we bring to you by supporting us on patreon.com, it would be a week where we're planning on bringing something fresh to your ears almost every single day. So if you've been enjoying the show, been thinking about possibly supporting us and haven't yet, join McBain, who decided to be a patron this last week for the first time. And join all our producers who support us on an ongoing level in a way that really enables the show to be a success at patreon.com. So special thanks to all those guys: Antonin, Ben, Bill, Dear Baby, Garlisle, Corey, Maxima, Zach, Zion. You guys get a shout out every week and you're worth it.
If you haven't yet, follow us on social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast. YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us directly on the podcast provider of your choice. Subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend, Tom Tate. Again, subscribe to that video game podcast newsletter that he's releasing on a weekly basis. Join us next week for our 4-year anniversary. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I am Kenny.
I was going to say Turok, but that was weird. I'm Nolan.
It's what Turok says at the beginning.
Yeah.
And this has been a toggleable episode of New Game Plus.